what he has to say about the experience of teaching women students is actually very relevant to what I'm going to say tonight. So I thought I'd read a bit from that article, and maybe some of you read it also, and this would give us a sort of common point to begin. He says, he teaches at Smith College, he teaches English, and I think he's been employed there for about 3 years, and when he took the job, he had all sorts of reactions from his friends who said, you know, my goodness, you're going to teach in an all-women's college. Well, one of the first things that his friends said was that the women would attack him, you know, would overwhelm him, and that he should build a little fortress around himself and put the picture of his wife on his desk and so forth. And other people said, well, it's not going to seem very comfortable. And when he was interviewed by one of the students on the student newspaper, he said blithely, well, it really doesn't make much difference what sex the student is. You know, a student is a student. Each year in my freshman writing class, I have my students read Audrian Rich's essay, Taking Women Students Seriously. There she asks us to, quote, listen to the small, soft voices, often courageously trying to speak up, voices of women taught early that tones of confidence, challenge, anger, or assertiveness are strident and unfeminine. Listen to the voices of the women and the voices of the men. Observe the space men allow themselves physically and verbally, the male assumption that people will listen, even when the majority of the group is female. That's the end of the Audrian Rich quote. I ask my students to talk about their own behavior in the classroom and mine. Most of them have chosen a women's college because they already know what Rich means about the difference between men and women as students. But few of them have extended the argument to include their male teachers. So they always tell me at first that they defer to my opinion because I'm the teacher, not because I'm a man, because they're students, not because they're women. I'm not so sure, and neither by the end of the class are they. I'm satisfied when I can get my students to see the issue, but for me that's just the beginning. For I know now that I was naive when I said at my interview that the student's sex doesn't matter. It matters profoundly, even or particularly when one isn't conscious of it. After a class on Orson Welles' Citizen Kane last year, my best student, an articulate and seemingly confident New Yorker, apologized to me for not having spoken that day. I have a much different view of the movie than everyone else does, she said, and I didn't want to disagree. Our students still suffer, even at a women's college, from the lessons Rich says women are taught about unfemininity of assertiveness. They are uneasy with the prospect of having to defend their opinions, not only against my own devil's advocacy, but against each other. They would rather not speak if speaking means breaking with their classmates' consensus. Yet that consensus is usually more emotional, a matter of tone, than it is intellectual. Last week I had two students, both of them bright, one speaking right after the other, offering diametrically opposed readings of a W.H. Auden poem. But the second student didn't define her interpretation against her predecessors, as I think a man would have done. She didn't begin by saying, I don't agree with that. She betrayed no awareness that she disagreed with her classmate and seemed surprised when I pointed it out. Such incidents have made me question my chief assumption about teaching, that people involved in a discussion will not only disagree with each other, but say so. I think they have made me a better teacher, a better listener, more able to gauge when silence means a real consensus and when it is a question of manners, to anticipate the ways in which a text might trouble my students in case those small, soft voices cannot summon the confidence to challenge it themselves. But they have also made me use Rich's terms to question my own performance, the verbal space I allow myself, my assumption that people will listen. Is that the teacher or the man? That's the end of the part that I want to read to you. Now, you get the drift there? Even though I don't agree in some ways with the way he says this, the spirit is exactly the spirit that I want to talk about tonight. And it has to do really with gender differences. And I'm going to say a little bit about gender and about feminism before I say these other things. When I talk to Jungian groups, I feel like I need to, I just feel this way, I mean, it's nothing of my experience, but my experience has been that it is important to define feminism, because feminism is not, after all, a club. There's no license to be a feminist, we don't take an examination, we declare ourselves to be feminists, and so Of course, there are differences among feminists in what we mean by feminism, but I also think there are a lot of similarities. And my own definition of feminism in the context in which we wrote the book Female Authority and did not call it Feminine Authority, as some Jungians have said to me or called the book, is one of feminism. And here's the way that I understand feminism. It's a discipline of thought and action that seeks to reveal and understand the implications of gender differences as these affect perceptions, attitudes, and values in all human actions, but especially in concerns of culture, politics, and the family. The goal of a feminist theory of knowledge, or a feminist epistemology, is to promote greater trust, mutuality, reciprocity, and empathy between gender groups. There are usually just two of those gender groups. Some societies apparently have three, but those are very rare. One group is sort of a neuter group. Generally, there are two groups. You can only belong to one. And you're assigned at birth, and we rarely talk about what that means. So the goal of feminist theory of knowledge is to promote greater trust, mutuality, reciprocity, and empathy between the genders. In order to reach this goal, feminists oppose all symbolic and social systems that promote a dominant submission mode as the central mode of interaction between adults. So feminists oppose a dominance and submission mode of interacting, a hierarchical imposition of power through one's privileges. At the same time, feminists work to expose the meaning of gender and the implication of this meaning in our activities.